ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Today marks 20 years since Hot Chip released The Warning. Their second album leapt from the quiet, reflective electro of their debut and catapulted us all onto the dance floor. Back in 2020, Joe Goddard and Al Doyle dropped in to Take 5. Their theme? Jubilant songs. Their vibes? Pure joy. I love Hot Chip, and this is a wonderful combo. So to mark the occasion, I wanted to relive this chat from the archives. The band were in the country to play Golden Plains Festival and a handful of other shows. We had no idea at the time that the world was about to go into a deep lockdown. So step into the blissful before times and relish in the happiness of Hot Chip.
In a lot of the tracks, like, for instance, Melody of Love, that was definitely a kind of desire to kind of make it this kind of ecstatic moment, make it this really kind of driving. It's almost like this, it's kind of quite speedy. It's almost like a high energy kind of disco track. We tried to kind of put everything into like creating a moment that was really joyful in that way. And that's partly why we used this kind of, it has like a sample from like an old gospel record halfway through. It's like a kind of preacher talking about, getting the most out of life. And so, yeah, for sure, on like certain moments on the album, that we were definitely kind of focused on that kind of emotion. Yeah,
I just assumed that was something that you recorded for the album. Where did you find that little sample?
Oh, it's really, really cool. It's like, I remember years and years ago at like a record shop in London, I bought a 12-inch that had a re-edit of an old like kind of disco track called Time by a group called the Mighty Clouds of Joy. And I used to play it out all the time. It's a really, really awesome kind of up-tempo disco record, super soulful. And then I was always like looking for other stuff by this group, the Mighty Clouds of Joy, afterwards. And I found like a live album by them. And at the start of one of the songs on this live album, it just has a kind of 3 minutes of kind of like preaching by one of the singers in the group. And it's got this really kind of great crowd noise behind it, and the band is kind of like warming up, and there's obviously such a great feel in the room, and I wanted to use it in a track for years, and then finally it kind of just really fit with this music when we started to make it.
How big is that bank of samples and I guess things that you find that you're just waiting to land in the right Hot Chip song?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely lots of other things like that. Yeah, I kind of just keep a file on my computer of like bits and pieces that as you will know, as like a passionate music fan, you sometimes just come across bits of older records that just feel like they could totally be recontextualized and kind of brought into another thing in a cool way. So yeah, I keep a store of kind of quite a lot of stuff. It's pretty random as well, like all different types of things.
We call it Joe's Vault of Heat. Joe's Heaters. It's there. It's got a lot. You know, you have to have various levels of security to get into it.
It's like Prince's Vault.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it's exactly like Prince's Vault, actually. What I would do to get my hands on that vault, Joe's Vault, not Prince's Vault, of course, which is a lot more exciting. It was 7:45 on the line to bring to teacher Miss Kathleen. First was Kevin, then came Lucy. Line was me. All of us were ordinary compared to Cynthia Rose. She always stood at the back of the line, a smile beneath her nose. We're going to begin, funnily enough, with Prince. I don't know if he meant that. Maybe it was at the frontal lobe. Taking you back to 1987 and the incredible Sign of the Times record. Starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam, butterscotch clouds and a tangerine, a side order. How is Starfish and Coffee a jubilant song for you?
I mean, it just has... I don't know exactly what he's talking about. I mean, it's fairly kind of unusual, but it has a real joy, just in the chord choices and in the way that Prince delivers the vocal. It feels very kind of full of fun and full of life.
Yeah, we were just talking about the Sesame Street version of this song where he sort of performs it with the Muppets.
Yo, Seymour, what's on the menu?
Well, we've got swordfish, eggs and coffee.
Just pancakes, maple syrup and jam.
Yeah,
I could write a song about that.
Yeah. Get out of here.
No, really, I can't.
Do you want to know what the story is behind this song?
Yeah.
It's apparently about a little girl called Cynthia Rose who was friends with one of his old, like his musical cohorts, Susanna Melvoin, and she sort of told Prince all about this girl, and so Prince wrote this song with these wild lyrics about old friend of his, friend of a friend, I guess.
Yeah, it's so cool.
All of us were ordinary compared to Cynthia Rose. She always stood at the back of the line, a smile beneath her nose.
It's, I guess, in taking that lyric in particular, there's a sort of childlike wonder going on with the lyrics too. Do you feel that when you hear this song? And do you feel that in the kind of music that you're drawn to, that magic, that innocence?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that I'm drawn to. I like that kind of naivety. I guess you get it in like Beach Boys music and like that kind of childlike wonder at sound. And Prince totally has that. You know, he always seems like a kind of kid let loose in the studio. You know, he's always experimenting and trying wild things. And that in terms of like the studio and techniques and engineering and stuff like that, this song is also super interesting because it has that crazy snare drum sound that's just like enormous. And like that mixed with the really kind of powerful... simple kind of piano chords, it gives it this kind of like joy and such a groove as well.
This next song is Fever Ray with To the Moon and Back.
Tell us about why you chose this as a jubilant song, the incredible Fever Ray.
I mean, I think Fever Ray is totally, totally awesome artist. And obviously it, as part of The Knife as well, just an incredible modern electronic group with a string of like great music. And this new Fever Ray record that this track is lifted from is a real favourite of mine from the last couple of years. And this, I think, feels super joyful. I don't know of the exact kind of meaning of the lyrics, but it seems from listening to it that Karen has kind of come out of one romantic relationship and beginning on another, and she's just full of that like passion of falling in love with someone.
First I take you, then you take me, breathe some life into a fantasy.
So there's this excitement and super kind of positive energy running through the song for that reason, I think, and it really, really kind of chimes, I think, if with anyone that's kind of been through that like first rush of emotion of like falling in love with someone. It really, I think, like captures that really amazingly well.
Hot Chip have made music over the last 20 years, and I'm sure that there have been many relationships and jubilant moments, falling in love, falling in lust, that have been soundtracked by the music that you make. When you're feeling that rush yourselves, do you feel the need to rush towards a studio and write something down or record, you know, a melody or a beat? Is that something that comes quite naturally to you?
I mean... we're all fairly kind of like obsessed with music making, so we will. I mean, I'll be in the studio kind of pretty much every day when I'm back in London, and so it soundtracks like every emotion that I'm going through. I always begin making kind of just trying to capture a kind of emotion in terms of a bit of music, like a few chords and some drums or whatever. And then Alexis is, you know, being the kind of like chief lyricist in the group, seems to be really good at kind of taking that little kind of loop of music and helping develop it into a song. So it's, for me, the lyrical stuff happens much more rarely. And so when I do occasionally get a kind of lyrical kind of emotional idea that I'm trying to convey, I do have to capture it and like run to the studio and write it down, as you said. But for me, that happens less. But musically, it happens kind of all the time.
It's been about 20 years since Hot Chip formed. And Al, you joined shortly after Joe and Alexis first had that fateful meeting at high school. Has your approach to the way you make and play your music shifted much in the last couple of decades?
Well, yeah, we sort of came quite late to things that other bands, you know, did all the time. So for instance, we didn't really work in a proper studio for a while, so that was like a new thing to us, you know, a few years in. And then recently we just worked with a producer, which, you know, isn't like kind of very unusual for most people to do, but for us that was a new thing. So we're sort of late bloomers, I think, on a few kind of fronts. But generally the process has been pretty similar. And, you know, we've got something that really works as a group now, and that we're sort of really kind of comfortable with and proud of. So yeah, it's been nice to kind of like let that evolve and let that kind of work itself out over the years. And yeah, we're just glad to still be doing it, I guess.
And we're glad to be listening to it. The producer that you mentioned is the late, great Philippe Zadar. I remember when he very sadly and suddenly passed away last year, all of the people that worked with him just talked about how jubilant he was, the energy that he would bring into the studio and just always kind of buoying you on towards the end of those tired days, you know, helping you find some light where maybe you were feeling a bit tired or hearing something in a song that maybe you were going to let go. What were your memories of working with Philippe in the studio?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, like it really kind of was like that, like a lot of enthusiasm and passion and belief in what you're doing and in the wonder of like having, you know, that wonderful opportunity to kind of record music together. He was really, really clearly loved what he did and did instill like all of the people he worked with a massive amount of kind of confidence in what they were doing. And I think that's a massive part of being a great producer. Like you kind of have to psychologically make the artist feel like they're in a comfortable place where they can really kind of express themselves. And he was really wonderful at that. And at the same time, just like really enjoyed the rest of his life, like would make us amazing cocktails in the evening. And, you know, like
sometimes it was a little bit too much, though. Yeah. I thought, honestly, he would come in and sometimes and like just you'd be doing like a take on the keyboard and he would just come in with like a shaker and a tambourine and just sort of like shake it like really near your face and just say, come on, it's good. And like, I was like, okay, man, I'm doing best here. Like, you know? So it was just that kind of level of extreme energy and enthusiasm. And like, you know, Philippe was a little older than us, but he was just like had the energy of a teenager or something like that. We just totally couldn't keep up with him, really. And so it just gave us a lot of energy, and it gave us a lot of just sort of will to move forward and to make the record as good as it could be. So we were very grateful to him for that.
You've got a different kind of energy in your lives as well these days. I mean, Joe, you're a dad. Al, do you have kids as well?
No, not at the moment, no.
Okay, not at the moment, not that you know of. what does that do to the way that you operate in music in every facet?
Well, I mean, like on a practical level, like, you know, I kind of like, I work more kind of normal hours, I guess, in the studio. Like I have a little studio in Shoreditch in North London, and I go down there while the kids are at school and kind of get a lot of work done in the studio and then try and get back to see them in the evening. So, you know, previously a few years ago before kids, I would stay up and like in the middle of the night every night making garage beats or whatever. I kind of do that a little bit less than I used to, even though I used to absolutely love working in that way. But yeah, I mean, obviously it impacts on the rest of your life in every way as well, and it just fills me with a lot of kind of joy and happiness. And my kids, Edie and Bert, absolutely love like dancing around the kitchen in their pants listening to Hot Chip songs.
Oh, that's good. They like your music. That's a relief.
Yeah, it is totally a relief, actually. I mean, they're pretty young at the moment. I'm guessing that when they kind of hit teenage years, they'll totally like turn off it and just think it's super uncool and just like boring old dad who makes this weird house music.
But they'll come round. They'll come round again. Don't worry.
I reckon. Yeah. But for now, they love it. They demand certain tracks, like when we're doing car journeys and whatever. It's super cool. And they come on stage at the end of a lot of Hot Chip gigs. We introduce them and call them the Microchips, and they come on.
That's so good. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, they've really been talking about like forming an actual band, because Alexis has a little girl as well, so they're thinking of getting together and like actually being a band.
The next generation. I mean, at the same time, you're also looking out to the crowd, and I'm sure seeing people that have literally grown up with Hot Chip too. When you see familiar faces in the crowd, and they're every 3 years, there's an extra wrinkle and someone with a bit less hair, maybe. What's that experience like?
I mean, the years are kind sometimes. It's not so kind.
It's super cool. And we've had a couple of times where like there's like an older parent in the crowd that have brought like a kind of teenage son with them. So it's kind of like two generations
Dragged along. Yeah. Dragged along kicking and screaming there.
We've also found it really funny recently. We've been covering Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. And so when you get like older dudes in the crowd and you're playing this song at a festival, we start playing it and you see this look coming over their face like, oh my God, I used to like mosh to this like 20 years ago. I could do that again. I'm gonna do it. And then they try and they just kind of put their back out.
A lot of lower back problems. You can actually see their backs go even from a distance. It's like,
it's really funny.
You see the jerking. You see
the stages go, the cogs turning in their mind like...
Hot Chip, a green light and a trip to the osteopath the Monday morning afterwards.
Yeah, book yourself in.
I'm glad that you mentioned playing that Beastie Boys song for anybody who forgets. Now, you've been finishing off your shows with this. Everyone has been cutting sick. Do the Beastie Boys factor into Hot Chip history? Why did you choose this song to add to your set in the last year or so?
Well, they totally do feature in Hot Chip's history in a big way, really. Like Alexis and I, you mentioned this earlier, when we kind of met at school when we were teenagers, you know, we were maybe like 12, 13 years old, and Beastie Boys is one of the first things that we really, really bonded over. We used to love all of those records, and we kind of realized that we're both into them and became friends partly because of that. And then in those years, it was when the Beastie Boys were putting out a load of great stuff, and also they used to have their magazine called like Grand Royal. And that's like the first time I ever read about like ramen noodles was in that magazine, or like Lee Perry and his music, or you know, there was an amazing article about having your hair cut in a mullet that inspired me to get a mullet for a little while, just as a joke. And like, they like culturally they were really important, you know.
Yeah.
And in terms of like fashion as well, and skateboarding, all of this stuff, they're so good at like they create this kind of lifestyle that like when we were teenagers was just like the coolest thing. So it was a massive thing for us. And then they released their book recently. You might have seen
The Beastie Boys book, amazing.
Yeah. So we were really, really into that, and we went to see the two surviving Beastie Boys talk in London, and Philippe came with us. And that was a really amazing experience. They were super charming and funny and great. And Philippe had just worked with them as well. He worked on their last album, Made It, with them. And that was one of the reasons that we decided to work with Philippe. So we were kind of bound up with them for a little while. We have kind of friends in common in New York as well with Mike D. So yeah, they're so close to our hearts, and it's really, really nice to be able to play one of their songs.
Well, another weird little connection, Mike D has also done the Take Five, so you're in good company.
Okay,
and he is
nice.
Such a lovely fella as well, isn't he? So generous.
Yeah,
a great person to find in the corner of a house party and keep him there for a bit of a chat.
I'm sure people have done that a few times.
Keep your eyes all on this fatty. If you like what you see, take hands and grab it. Hurry, hurry. Hurry, hurry. Then I get like all this room magic. Ride it automatic till the sun come up.
Let's jump back into the music, because you picked a song from a killer record. It was a short one, but a good one, that came out in 2018 from Teyana Taylor. This song features the producer of this record, Kanye West, on it. It's called Hurry. How is this a jubilant song?
I mean, this is like quite a sexy song.
The whole thing, that whole record is sexy. Like it's kind of intoxicating in a way that, you know, when you're flipping through tabs at work and you think I shouldn't be seeing this.
Yeah.
I always think that when I'm listening to Teyana Taylor.
Yeah. It's her voice is really seductive and she's a very beautiful woman and her singing voice is really amazing. And the production on the track is really fantastic as well. I think it's like a Sly Stone sample that Kanye uses on this track.
I can't strain my brain. I know how it feels to worry all the time.
And maybe kind of a little bit similar to Fever Ray. Like there's a joyousness in this kind of sensuality of this song, you know. And it's one that, you know, when we're DJing, it's often kind of like house and techno and disco music. But I like to kind of drop this track in to the end of a DJ set and, you know, it gives people a chance to kind of like dance a little slower and kind of have fun and
hook up.
Yeah, exactly, which is pretty joyful, right?
Absolutely. So. When we're talking a lot about being, you know, jubilant and this feeling of euphoria, I think that one of the things that really resonates with it is freedom too, and same as sexual freedom. Freedom is a huge part of feeling jubilant.
Mm, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and there's a real kind of like joy in the kind of like gentleness of this like soulful music as well, I think.
I don't know no patience, got no more time to wait. Hey, serious, need that one or two or three or more times after full play. Rock it, shit, blast it, a Jimmy Neutron. Time to fuck me good with them Jimmy shoes on. I can't wait till you all on me, yeah. You know I love it, love it, love it, love it.
This next track is Every Man by Double Exposure.
It's on you, pick and choose where you want to go in life. No one said that the road would be paved all smooth and nice. If you want to be a lawyer or just lay around all day, don't be jealous of the fellas who want to go all the way.
Tell me about this one, a killer from the late 70s. I'd never heard it before. How is this a jubilant song?
Well, this is it's like a soul, old like New York kind of disco banger, and I think lyrically he's talking about the fact that like as a person you're responsible for yourself and you have to make your own destiny, you have to go for what you want, and you know you're responsible for the decisions that you make in your life. So it's kind of serious in its meaning, but the joy really comes from just how like unstoppably like powerful and kind of soulful the horns and the chords, the guitar and bass and everything, the way that it's played is really, really super joyful. It's like full of energy and life and really like wonderful track to play in a DJ set that I often do. It was the first way I ever kind of came across it. It's like the part of the vocal was sampled in an old like 90s kind of pop house track that I remember, you know, seeing on the TV when I was a kid, and it's kind of stuck with me. It's just a tiny little vocal loop, and years later I realized that it's from this record. And yeah, it just has that like massive late 70s New York disco sound. It like the production is really incredible and super well engineered, and the playing on it, you know, everyone involved in the recording of the song was obviously like a super like amazing disco session player, and yeah, it's full of life and energy, and it has that kind of churchy like gospel kind of energy to it as well.
When Hot Ship hit the stage, I mean, the joy that you bring and the incredible musicianship you bring as well when you're up there is amazing to witness. What's it like for you? Because there seems to be a lot of jubilance, a lot of playfulness when you're up there. Is it chaotic or is there a control to the chaos?
Well, we like to make it look easy, but it is. It's hard work, a genuine hard work up there. There's a lot of effort that goes in. No, I mean, it's playing with these guys is always just amazing. And I mean, they're sort of, we all feel like we're sort of brothers up there, and we can make each other laugh very easily. I've got the hardest job because I have to play next to Owen, And Owen's very, very funny, and he can sometimes he cracks me up, and I just cracks me up so hard that I basically can't really even play anymore, or I start doing wrong notes, and then he finds that even more funny, and it's like a sort of feedback loop of bad notes and corpsing.
We call them donkers when you play a wrong note.
That's right.
So after the gig, sometimes we're like, any donkers tonight? Yeah. Anyone dunk things up?
Yeah, yeah.
But how lucky is that you get to, after years and years of playing together, you still have fun on stage and you can still just make each other laugh?
Yeah. No, it is. It's, I sometimes can't believe it that we're not more annoyed with each other.
The two of you, of course, have other projects too. You're not just part of Hot Chip. Joe, you're a solo artist. You work with the Two Bears. You're one half of the Two Bears. And Al, you're a member of LCD Sound System and New Build. When you look back at the joy that you have on stage, but also the joy that you've given so many people through all the music that you've created, how does that feel, thinking about that legacy of song?
Makes you feel pretty old. But I mean, it's a good feeling.
You have
for sure.
a good stamp on everything from 2000 onwards, that's for sure.
Well, we knew there was going to be a point. It's just so funny that you use that word, because it's like, you know, with the point that you start thinking about legacy.
I know, it's like calling someone a veteran, isn't it? Like,
yeah, yeah. No, I'm into it. I'm growing more comfortable with it.
Because like some of the other musicians in LCD Sound System are a generation older than us even, so we kind of felt like we were the youngsters, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, that's a good thing about being in LCDs, because James is 10 years older than me, so I've constantly got 10 years on him. He's never going to get those 10 years back.
I'm losing my edge.
So it makes me feel better, because I'm the younger guy in that band.
I was freaking out in the lead up to chatting with you today, reading a great piece, a conversation in The Guardian that you had around the release of the last record. And is it true that Kieran Hebden, better known as Fortet, was a mentor of yours when you were in high school?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, like, yes, he was 2 years above myself and Alexis in school. And it took me to the first ever gig that I went to. Kieran took me along to. A relative of his was playing in a little pub in central London, and yeah, over the years introduced me to a lot of my favorite records, actually, really. And you know, kind of taught me a lot about DJing. He used to, you know, on a Friday evening go around like a mate's house, and it would be Kieran playing the records when we were like 15 or so. And you know, he had a very eclectic and kind of passionate interest in lots of different kinds of music even back then, so it really did teach me a lot. And he's still like a really, really big friend, and I'll often send him music to get his opinion on it even now. So yeah, it's great. Yeah,
I was talking to Dan Snaith Caribou last week about his new record, and he was saying about some of the songs that Kieran had saved from the trash heap. He seems to be that kind of great I guess second set of ears on a lot of work, and be such a good friend in that way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. He's very incisive, and like, he always has a very good comment to make about your music, and he doesn't pull any punches. Like, if he thinks something is dull, he will just say like, this, I don't think this is the one, you know. But when he hears something that he does like, he's very like good at kind of giving you a good opinion on the music and giving you some kind of good ideas, and it's super helpful, actually, honestly.
Hot Chip are a band that have been around for a long time. They're not veterans, though. They do have a legacy, but they're not old. You have been making so many incredible records and putting on so many amazing shows that really make me, for one, dance like a damn fool. And it doesn't feel like you're kind of ready to, you know, roll up the swag and leave. Like, you still seem so excited about making music, not just with Hot Chip, but with so many other projects on the boil. What do you do next after a record like A Bathful of Ecstasy? Is there anything that you haven't done that you want to do either by yourselves or as Hot Chip?
I mean, there's a few things in the diary for the next few months. There's a bit more touring. We're playing Coachella next month, and we have one song that we're going to go into our friend Mark's studio and finish in a couple of weeks. But there's no more musical plans after that. I guess Al's finishing like building a new studio in London, which is another kind of exciting kind of development, and that's a place for LCD and all of our different projects to kind of work. And yeah, we don't really know the future much after that. But I mean, we still, as you said, we still all really feel super passionate about what we do, and that we are still kind of learning how to make records and engineer records and how to be better DJs and producers. So I'm still like super kind of passionate about that and kind of want to continue that journey, you know. My head's spinning round, I don't know where.
We have one more tune, and this is a killer. It's Hot Chocolate, but the Con edit of I Just Love What You're Doing. Who is Con? Tell me about Con. You know that I actually went straight onto Spotify to find a Con mixtape, and I am into Con.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. I think he kind of began his career making more hip-hop music, and he's you know, a New York guy, been doing it for a really, really long time. Yeah, really like super knowledgeable and deep. And in the last few years, he's moved more into disco and he does amazing re-edits. If anybody likes them, they can pick them up on like Bandcamp. They have a great selection of his edits. And he also is part of a new disco project called The Vision. And they have an amazing track called Heaven that I've been playing out a lot recently, like modern disco, super, super good, like really, really great track. And he's a great DJ as well. And yeah, his edits are just real like dance floor weapons. They're really super good. And this one, yeah, I mean, Hot Chocolate, a great singles band, great songwriters. We actually like recorded a little bit of Bath Full of Ecstasy in the same studio, Rack Studios in London, that where Hot Chocolate made all of their records. So it was really great to be in there. And yeah, I mean, this track is a real kind of easy fit for this. This subject of joy in music, like it's really, really full of joy in life and love. And yeah, again, like awesome playing, awesome musicians, yeah, full of energy. Yeah, so enjoy.
Absolute heaters and pure warmth and joy from Joe and Al of Hot Chip. Always people I want to spend time with. Next time on Take 5, we're jumping back into the present with an icon of cooking and charisma. Po Ling Yao is one of those people who gives everything a crack. A visual artist who became a famous TV chef, she's hosted shows, acted, and has no end to her curiosity. Po is joining you to Take 5 with her five sides. I'll see you then.
Come hang out with your mates on Double J.
Loving great music is a lifelong passion.
And we're here to help you keep discovering.
Hello, it's Michael Hing from Double J Mornings.
It's Yumi Stines here.
It's Dylan Lewis from Arvo's on Double J.
Great music lasts forever, and you'll find it on Double J. Somebody that you used to know, but
you didn't have to cut me off. We're on DAB Radio in your car, or just swipe across on the Triple J app.